Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Carving It Up Live right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. As always, I am Bryson Carver. Very excited to be with you after a crazy weekend. A lot of stuff going on in the NFL draft and the NBA playoffs. We're going to talk about all of it, plus as well a tribute to the great, one of the greatest Tennessee Volunteer athletes of all time, Candace Parker, who retired over the weekend. Shout out to Ace for an all-time great WNBA career, as well as the career she's about to go into, as well as many others of broadcasting. She's great at that as well. We got a lot to talk about, though. Joel Embiid did it again. I've been on this for a long time, and he did it again. Went full Houdini in the fourth quarter of this past game against the New York Knicks. Game four, Jalen Brunson was absolutely spectacular. Talk about that game in about 10 to 15 minutes. Also, the three teams I thought had a really, really good NFL draft, and the three teams I was kind of scratching my head about, like, what was their objective coming into this thing? I'll talk about that in about 30 minutes. Also, I talked about this a month ago, but as time goes on, it further validates my point. There is little to no pressure on Dak Prescott for this upcoming NFL season. I'll detail why in 45 minutes. Again, ton of things going on in the National Football League, as well as in the NBA playoffs. End of the show. I mean, come on. Are we really going to entertain the conversation that the Lakers have a chance to beat the Denver Nuggets after being down 3-0? Listen, congratulations. Like, you know what? You won game four. You didn't lose. What would that have been, 12 in a row? Like, that's big time. That is elite basketball right there from the Los Angeles Lakers. Talk about that at the end of today's show, as well as some other things around the NBA playoffs. But first, you know, they say that a wise man learns from the mistakes of others. A fool learns from his own mistakes or her own mistakes. Let us all take a moment and understand the fact that listening to nameless, faceless idiots on the internet and taking their advice on certain things tends to not be the greatest idea in the world. You know, Morgan Freeman has a great saying, the Academy Award winning, all-time great actor Morgan Freeman has one of my top five phrases and sayings and quotes of all time. Don't take criticism from the same people you wouldn't take advice from. Again, Joe2703 on Twitter, who has 5 followers, probably not the greatest person to take advice from. That's what Kevin Durant did 5 years ago. Many folks to this day, today even, criticize Kevin Durant. You left Russell Westbrook high and dry in Oklahoma City after blowing a 3-1 lead to the at-the-time defending champion 73-win Golden State Warriors, and you hopped on the bandwagon. That was the worst thing Kevin Durant ever did. No, not even close. Kevin Durant at that point had 4 scoring titles and an MVP, had never won a championship. Had come close, got to the 2012 finals, got to the 14-16 Western Conference finals, but came up short. And he looked around, he said, you know what? Russell's great, but playing with Steph, playing in that system in Golden State, pretty good. You know, Kevin Durant, at the end of the day, people criticize him for this, but we don't do this in other businesses. He joined an operation. He joined an organization that gave him the greatest opportunity to be successful. That's what any person in their right mind would do if offered the opportunity in any field of work, the NBA included. Worst thing Kevin Durant did was not join the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry. It was leave the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry. The Phoenix Suns got swept yesterday against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Talk about Anthony Edwards in a few minutes because he deserves some time and some shine. No question about that. But KD is the face of this. I've said since last offseason, the Phoenix Suns screwed themselves over, boxed themselves in, if you will, from the day that they traded Chris Paul for Bradley Beal. Chris Paul's washed. Chris Paul, that would have been nice to have him in the series, wouldn't it? Not saying they'd have won, but would have been nice to have Chris Paul, a guy who's a true bona fide point guard, doesn't turn the basketball over, gets everybody in and out of their sets. Kevin Durant now doesn't have to play the 4. He gets to stay in his natural position as the 3, as the small forward. You trade for Bradley Beal. You, rather than moving on from DeAndre Ayton or Monty Williams, you move on from both of them, which was dumb. Ayton was an impactful player. Monty was an impactful coach. They couldn't coexist anymore. Fine. Then get rid of one of them. Don't get rid of both of them. It hurt them in this run. And by the way, replacing John Drayton with one of the softest seven-footers in the NBA, his name's Yusuf Nurkic, and he has no resume to speak of in the NBA postseason. And they never at any point added a point guard. They asked Devin Booker, as true of a two-guard as there is, you play point guard, Devin. And his assist numbers were pretty good. But if you watch the games, actually watch the tape for the Phoenix Suns, they were a really clunky offense all season, which is in large part why they were the worst fourth quarter team in the NBA this season in 2023 through 2024. But as far as Kevin Durant, we knew that the Steph, KD, it's like kind of like the Tom Brady, Belichick thing, except in this case, Steph had won before KD got there. Who deserves more credit for those back-to-back titles in 17 and 18 for my Golden State Warriors? Was it Steph Curry? Was it Kevin Durant? Well, I think the debate is dead. If you want to look at Steph's career in totality, in terms of his playoff career, in terms of his success, you want to look at KD's playoff career in its totality, in terms of his success, absent one another, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, and with each other, Steph and KD informed, in my opinion, the 17 Warriors were far and away with the 0-1 Lakers could have beaten them. 83 Sixers, probably not. 86 Celtics, no. 96 Bulls, no. Golden State Warriors 2017, greatest team ever assembled. Steph and KD, when they were together, pretty great. That stat says 33-3. It should say 33-9. Won about 78% of their games. Won two championships. KD without Steph in Oklahoma City, Brooklyn, Phoenix. 8 games over .500. No titles in the postseason. Steph without KD, 66-39. He has two NBA titles. But since the breakup, which KD obviously initiated, think about this. What has Kevin Durant been without Steph? We can show you right here. His numbers are, they're not good. They're excellent. 38-5 on four, basically 49-37-88 shooting splits. Those are tremendous numbers. But then you look down. He's 5 games under .500 in the postseason, 13-18. He's won one in the last 5 years, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin Wayne Durant has won one playoff series, and he has been swept out of the first round twice. He's never appeared in the conference finals, and he's never won an elimination game in the National Basketball Association since leaving Steph Curry. Steph, since leaving KD, for the record, has missed the playoffs 3 times. Now, one of those seasons I don't really count because Steph only played 5 games. Nonetheless, 3 playoff, non-appearances. And this is what Steph has done since KD left him high and dry. Average 28-5-5 on 46-38-83 shooting splits. But more importantly, he's 22-13 in the playoffs. He's won 5 playoff series to KD's 1. He's won a Western Conference Finals MVP. He's won an NBA title. He's won a Finals MVP. And oh, by the way, just as a little cherry on top, he recorded the very first 50-point Game 7 in NBA history. Kevin Durant was bullied by dopes on the internet who said, oh, those titles in Golden State, they don't count on your resume. Folks, when we look back, let's just use an example. Michael Jordan, 6-for-6 in the NBA Finals. You want to know how his first title came? And this isn't just a credit from MJ. Rings are rings, man. But that Bulls team's Michael, Scottie, Horace Grant, the whole crew, Phil Jackson as head coach. They play the Los Angeles Lakers in the 1991 NBA Finals. Prime Magic Johnson, pre-HIV diagnosis, obviously. Kareem had retired. James Worthy got hurt in the series, barely played. So essentially, the big three that made up the Lakers dynasty in the 80s, Magic, Kareem, Worthy, one had already retired, and one barely played in the series. It was basically Magic and a bunch of guys against the Jordan Bulls. We don't remember that. It's probably the first time you've heard that ever, if not since the 90s, that I just told you that. We look at it as Michael's first championship. We look at that as the infamous photo of Michael Jordan in the locker room, champagne flying everywhere. He's hugging the Larry O'Brien trophy, crying like it's holding a child. And his father, his deceased father, obviously over his shoulder, smiling with him. We don't think about the fact the Lakers were beat up in that series. Folks, 30 years down the road, nobody's going to think about the fact that Kevin Durant did join a 73-9 team after blowing a 3-1 lead in Oklahoma City. I'm sorry, we will not think about that. We will think about the fact that he won 2 finals MVPs. Personally, Steph, I thought Steph should have gotten 2018. That's beside the point. But all throughout that 2018-19 season, I did not have a podcast at the time. I actually started the show 4 months after that season ended, after those finals were over. Kind of wish I'd had a podcast at that point because it would have been really interesting as a Warriors fan to kind of document that interesting season throughout. All season long, KD's skipping media availability. There's a report that he went weeks without speaking to teammates. The Draymond thing, I get, because Draymond literally called him the B-word multiple times. That's crossing the line, and I love Draymond. But Kevin Durant's here, and, well, Steph, one before you. You will never be as beloved in Golden State as Steph Curry. You could win 5 championships in a row, and Steph Curry will still be more beloved than you. Just like Dwayne Wade will always be more beloved than LeBron James in Miami. You know why? Because D-Wade basically grew up in Miami. Steph basically grew up in the Bay Area. LeBron didn't. KD didn't. Nothing wrong with that. Fans still love him. Steph holds a special place in Warriors fans' hearts like myself. But Dwayne Wade holds a special place in the hearts of Miami Heat fans. Kevin Durant, we know, is very active on social media. He had the burners. Then he, and I props to him for this, ditched the burners, at least as far as we know, and just start answering people on the internet from his own account. At least he's doing it from his own account and not being a little cowardly and hiding behind fake accounts. But Kevin Durant has rabbit ears. Kevin Durant heard what was said about him in the national media and really on social media and caved to peer pressure. Caved to people who, let's be real, don't exactly have Kevin Durant's best interest at heart. I don't think KD's going to consult them on business decisions as it pertains to Nike or 35 Ventures, his production company, or his contract negotiations. He listened to the internet, and this is what the result is. Kevin Durant, I showed you the numbers right there. He's averaging like 30 points, 8 rebounds, and like 5 assists in the playoffs since leaving Steph. Those are out and very efficient shooting splits. Outstanding. But last 10 playoff games, KD is 2-8, and 7 of those 8 losses are by double digits. He's still an all-time great player and an all-time great scorer. But when you're in the most... Kevin Durant, no matter where else he went, he was never going to get a better head coach than Steve Kerr unless he went to the Miami Heat with Eric Spoelstra. He was never going to get a better general manager than Bob Myers anywhere. Bob Myers was the single best general manager in the NBA when he was with the Warriors. He was never going to get a better, a more unselfish teammate, probably in NBA history, among superstars, than Steph Curry. He's never going to get a more unselfish number 3 star in Klay Thompson. And he was never going to get an offensive and defensive catalyst. While they might have had their battles, he was never going to get somebody who filled the voids that the Warriors had, the way Draymond Green did. And Kevin Durant was never going to get that elsewhere. He joined Brooklyn, coached by Steve Nash, run by Sean Marks, and his co-star was Kyrie Irving. Now, Kyrie was awesome yesterday and has really fit in well with Dallas because it's a ready-made organization. There's no fault in that. There's a select few guys in the history of the NBA that could take crap franchises and turn them into something special. MJ, LeBron, Steph, I mean, Giannis. It's very, very short list. Jokic. But the Golden State Warriors, as we knew them in the mid to late 2010s, if Kevin Durant stays there, we're having very different conversations about him. We're having very different conversations, I think, potentially about Steph, because Steph would probably have more championships at that point. He would have more championships at that point. Instead, we look at Steph almost as in a higher light because, hey, you won before KD, you won with KD, and you won without KD or after KD. And for the record, that title in 2022, seeing the state of my Warriors, that's looking better on Steph's resume by the day that he won a title with that group in 2022. Kevin Durant went to dysfunctional Brooklyn and then went to, he requested a trade, obviously ended up going to the Phoenix Suns with an impulsive owner who does not know what he's doing as it pertains to constructing an NBA-ready roster. Let this be a lesson to anybody out there. If you're getting hate on social media or people are pushing back and you're not this, you're not that, you will almost always make the wrong decision. Again, one more time, to quote the great Morgan Freeman, don't ever take criticism from the same people you wouldn't take advice from. Kevin Durant did, and you see the result. 5 years, no conference finals, hasn't even sniffed an NBA finals, and 2 first-round sweeps. That's what happens when you leave the best basketball organization in the NBA, with the exception of the Miami Heat. That's what I got. I love Kevin Durant. I will always love Kevin Durant. He helped my favorite team in the world win two championships. And for the record, those that know the Bible, those that read the Bible as I do, know the story of the prodigal son. You know, the Kevin Durant, Draymond Green situation. Although in this case, the father basically called the son the B word in this instance with the Warriors. But nonetheless, KD runs off, tries to create a life for himself. I mean, you could argue he's probably more successful than the proverbial prodigal son was in the Bible, but in general. And then he comes home, and the father has his arms wide open. That's Steph Curry. That's Steve Kerr. I know him and Draymond have had a little bit of a tiff in the last year or so, but you're telling me, if you told Draymond Green, hey, Kevin Durant wants to come back, you're telling me Draymond's going to say no? if not, then trade Draymond, if that's the case. And I love Draymond, but he'd never say no to that proposition. So, listen, KD, Paul George, listen, as a Warriors fan, I'm just trying to recruit an actual true co-star to Steph who can get his own shot. That's all I'm asking. That's all I'm asking. Yeah, that's where I'm at on the KD situation. Transitioning, though, Anthony Edwards. I want to talk about Anthony Edwards for a second. Because, listen, does he share some resemblance to Michael Jordan? Yeah, there's conspiracy theorists out there that say, hey, he might be Jordan's illegitimate child. I don't think that's the case. But those that are comparing this kid, this uber-talented kid out of the University of Georgia, to worst case scenario, the second greatest basketball player who ever lived. Like, let's slow down. I know we tend to overreact, not we, but the general media tends to overreact and go big on these stories. Just let's slow down. Here's what I will say about Anthony Edwards, who led the Minnesota Timberwolves to a sweep, a four-game sweep of the Phoenix Suns, and was easily the best player in the series. Here's what I'll say about Ant, because I still don't really buy the Minnesota Timberwolves as a true contender. I don't love the pieces. Rudy Gobert had a good series. You know why? Because he's playing a very, I want to emphasize this, the single softest seven-footer in the NBA in Yusuf Nurkic. Karl-Anthony Towns had a really good series. Props him. Karl-Anthony Towns is a really good co-star. Chris Finch, who, God bless him, tore his patellar tendon or something at the end of the game because Mike Conley, I mean, just terrible situation there. He had to be, he was on crutches after the games. I've never seen that in my life. I hate it for Chris Finch. I still don't totally trust him against the likes of a Michael Malone or somebody like that in the Western Conference. Heck, a Mark Dagnalt of the Oklahoma City Thunder, who just won that award, Coach of the Year. He would have gotten my vote. Anthony Edwards has a certain quality about him, though. And I think that there is a scenario in which he becomes the next face of the league. People have been trying to project that for a while. Here's the fact of the matter. Is not to spoil the last segment of my show today. The Denver Nuggets are going to beat the Los Angeles Lakers. Whether it's tonight, which I think it will be because I picked Nuggets in five, or whether it's late in the series, Denver's not blowing a 3-0 lead. So it's going to be Denver. It's going to be Minnesota in round two. Okay. So Kevin Durant couldn't take out the Denver Nuggets last year. LeBron and AD got swept by the Denver Nuggets last year. The Miami Heat, playoff Jimmy, Eric Spoelstra, the Heat culture, got gentlemen swept by the Nuggets last year. If the Nuggets win tonight, they'll have gentlemen swept LeBron and AD. I'm not even saying the Timberwolves have to beat the Nuggets in the second round. But if Anthony Edwards plays Nikola Jokic to a draw, or at least close to it, and it goes a hard-fought six. Reason I say a hard-fought six is because the Nuggets beat the Suns last year in six. That was the most lopsided six-game series I've ever seen in my life. They torched Phoenix the last two games of the series. The point being, if he plays the single best basketball player on earth to a draw or to, dare I say, a seventh and decisive game in the Rocky Mountains, with the charisma, with the swagger, with the fact, let's be real, he's an American-born player, and the fact that the NBA is outside of the Toronto Raptors, an American or North American league, there's an advantage to being. I mean, listen, if we're talking about, soccer in Europe, you're gonna be if you're an American player that goes to Europe to play soccer, you're not gonna be as popular as Ronaldo or Messi. You're just not. Even if you're as good or close, you're just not. Or Mbappe in France. Anthony Edwards has a swagger about him. He's got a coolness factor. He was obviously in that movie with Adam Sandler. Forgetting the name of the movie right now, but it was on Netflix a few years ago. He's got the charisma. He's got a sense of humor. His teammates absolutely love him. And let's be real about Anthony Edwards. Last three postseasons, gotten better every year. Here's the stats. 2022, he averaged 25-4-3 on 45% for the field, 40 from three. 2023, he upped it from 25 points to 31 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 48% from the field, went down percentage-wise in terms of his efficiency to about 35% from 40. This year thus far, he's been excellent. 31-8-6 on 51 from the field, 43, almost 44% from three. That's excellent. But Bryson, why do you say face of the league? What does that mean to be the face of the league? Well, some of the qualities I just mentioned, right? A swagger, a gravitas around you. The fact that, again, American-born player, I think since 1984, around early to mid-80s is really when the NBA started to see a resurgence. Listen, it was people saw the NBA when it was during the Russell Wilt days. Nobody watched in the 70s. The finals were on tape delay in the 70s. So I'm going to go from 1984, A, because it's exactly 40 years ago, and B, to me, that's around the time the NBA really started to come up. Lakers-Celtics Finals, Bird Magic, okay? Seven faces of the league in the history of the NBA, here they are in my opinion. Since 1984, these are the seven guys. Magic and Bird, I think, basically shared it because you had Boston, L.A., two sides of the country, obviously. You know, they faced off in the college final in 1979. They were both, obviously, all-time top 10 players ever. Bird and Magic. Obviously, Michael Jordan was the face of the NBA all throughout the 90s. Then I think it became Shaq's, because Shaq, again, the dominant game, most dominant player in the history of the NBA at his peak, in his prime, the three-peat with Kobe. Kobe won the face of the league, yet it was still Shaq. Shaq was in movies. Shaq was a rapper. Heck, to this day, Shaq still has a certain celebrity quality about him that most other athletes, forget basketball players, simply don't have. Then I think Kobe, once Shaq left and Kobe, even though he wasn't necessarily having early in his time being the face of the league, a lot of playoff success. He's putting up these crazy scoring streaks, the 81-point game, all that. Then, at the end of his time being the face of the league, made three straight finals, won the last two, was finals MVP in both, clutch player, all that. Then, I think after Kobe's last championship, basically the day LeBron James went on the decision with Jim Gray and said, I'm taking my talents to South Beach, joining the Miami Heat, I think then he became the face of the NBA. I think from that stretch to around like 2018-ish, LeBron James was the face of the NBA. He drew in the biggest audience. Then I think from 2019 to about a year or so ago, it was Steph Curry. Heck, I could make a case it's still Steph Curry because he's still one of the most watched, if not the most watched player in the NBA as it pertains to TV ratings, social media, all of that. Now notice, most of these instances of these seven, they were the best player in the league, but in some cases they were not. There was a stretch where Tim Duncan was absolutely the best player in the NBA. I mean, go watch some of those Tim Duncan finals. Go look at some of those stat lines. They're freakish. Both ends of the floor. Tim Duncan didn't want to be the face of the NBA. Tim Duncan was about showing up, playing great defense, scoring when he could, being a great teammate. That was his goal. Nikola Jokic, to me, is far and away the best player in the NBA today. He doesn't want to be the face of the league. I mean, he's got the nice hotels.com. I think it's hotels.com commercial where he's got the pony, and it's fine. But he had the commercial for Despicable Me 4, whatever it is. Jokic isn't necessarily a guy who loves the spotlight. He shows up. He's gonna get you a triple double on crazy efficiency. Bully whatever big man you throw his way. Get teammates involved for some open threes. That's what he's about. He's not about shoe deals. None of that. Anthony Edwards is not a, he's certainly creeping into the top 10. He's not a top five player in the NBA. Now, if he goes on a longer run this year, if he beats Denver, now we got to start having a conversation. But right now he's not there, and he's certainly not better than Jokic. He's not. Nobody is. But he's got the swagger. He's got, again, you could argue two of the biggest highlights of this NBA season both came from Anthony Edwards. The game when he blocked, I forget who that was against. It's fuzzy right now. I can't remember. And then the crazy poster on John Collins against the Jazz where he just threw it down on his head. He's got the swagger. He's in movies. Big smile. He's funny. He gets better every year. I'm not saying Anthony Edwards is even going to be the best player in the league at any point, but is he capable of being the face of the league? Folks, I don't even think he's 23 years old yet. Like, he's still a baby in the NBA. He's still got, this is year four for him. He's still got a long ways to go in terms of developing and adding to his game and becoming potentially the best player in the NBA. And he's American. Again, that's not to take a shot at other countries. Wemby. I think if Wemby wants to embrace being the best, not the best player in the league, because I think he will be, but the face of the NBA, then I think he'll get it. Because he's this freak 7'5 guy who's a monster on the defensive end, is a literal unicorn on the offensive end in terms of the shots he's able to take and make, the handle, all that. If Anthony Edwards wants it, he gets it, as far as I'm concerned. So right now, I think it's sort of, we're seeing a passing of the torch. It's right now, you could argue it's probably like LeBron, Steph-ish. I would argue Steph a little bit more, because if you look at TV ratings and social media views, Steph's, you know, is watched more than LeBron, and obviously has the game to back it up, the swagger, all that, all the things that those other guys had, you know, Magic, Bird, Michael Jordan, Shaq, Kobe, LeBron, and Steph. Anthony Edwards can join that group. As crazy as it sounds, he's only 23 or 22, 23 years old. But let's back it up just a little bit on the Jordan comparisons. By a little bit, I mean a lot of it. Like, we're talking about one of the two greatest basketball players of all time. I think LeBron's a GOAT. We'll have that conversation another day. But that's where I'm at. Feel free to chime in the comment section. I always love to hear everybody's thoughts and opinions on this subject or anything else that I'm discussing. I want to transition, and I almost feel bad at this point to a certain level, but when something keeps happening over and over and over, and you seem to be the only one who sees it or is willing to call out what you're seeing in the national media, then it's, and I'm not in the national media, obviously, but just in the general, you know, media as a broad term, podcasting, TV, radio, the whole bit, print. I do feel some sort of responsibility to basically call it out. So Sixers loss to the Knicks yesterday. Jalen Brunson was special, doesn't even begin to describe. Jalen Brunson was awesome. He dropped 47 points for the record for a Knicks team that scored 97 the whole game. So Jalen Brunson gave you 47. Everybody else gave you 50. Which, by the way, 47 is not only a Knicks record, Knicks single game record for points scored in a playoff game, but also Jalen Brunson became the first player in NBA history to score 85 points and get 20 assists in a two-game stretch. Which, that surprised me. That's never been done before. Saw that today. It's true. Jalen Brunson has done just that. Want to talk about Joel Embiid, though, because he disappeared in another fourth quarter. And I'm already ready for the backlash. Well, Bryson, he's hurt. He's injured. For the record, he also, again, as I said on Friday, never thought I'd be saying these words as it relates to an NBA player's injury status. He has Bell's palsy. Minor case of it, but he has it. You can see his right eye kind of like slumps a little bit. Like, it's clearly there. No question. And I've never not given Joel Embiid props for playing through a lot of the injuries, whether it be his knee, whether it be, again, Bell's palsy, whether it be he had, an eye issue a few years ago. I've never not given him credit on that. Here's what I find hard to believe. Here's what I find very, very hard to believe, and I don't just attribute this to fatigue. In this series, and we'll have a graphic in just a second. This is not a graphic, but I did think it's important to bring up. In quarters 1 through 3 in this series, this through 4 games, Sixers-Knicks, Joel Embiid is shooting 52% from the field. That's pretty good. In the fourth quarter, he goes from shooting 52% from quarters 1 through 3 to shooting 16% in the fourth quarter. We can show you Joel Embiid's fourth quarter stats throughout this series, folks. They are absolutely atrocious. He averages 6.8 points, 0.5 rebounds. Joel Embiid is 7'2" tall. He's gotten 2 fourth quarter rebounds this entire series. 7'2", he's got 2 fourth quarter rebounds. He's shooting 16% from the field, 12% from three. He's a -4, and he's doing this, by the way, 10 minutes on average of action in the fourth quarter. As I've said then, a year ago, coming into the playoffs, and I'll say now, Joel Embiid is not a reliable player. That can apply to his injury history, the fact that he's always beat up coming the postseason. That can be attributed to his lack of success, the fact that he's the only MVP, and I will never stop beating this drum, in the history of the NBA to have never gone to a conference finals. Never been to a conference finals. NBA finals, I think, as far as MVPs, that's a short list. I think Nash never went to a finals. Derrick Rose has never been to a finals. Far as I know, Jokic was on that list, but got to the finals a year ago and obviously won the championship. That's it. Embiid's the only one guy to never get to the Eastern Conference Finals. Never gotten there. And has come up small in not one, not two, but three Game 7s in 2019, 2021, and 2023, respectively. Not to mention a Game 6 last year before the Game 7. Coming up small in the fourth quarter. Here's what I find hard to believe. And the Embiid defenders, and they are aplenty, is that how can a guy who, again, is dealing with the issue with the right side of his face, who is dealing with some knee issues going back to his injury back in January, how does that guy look like MVP Joel Embiid, quarters 1 through 3, and basically be relegated to a perimeter jump shooter in the fourth quarter? Basically be relegated to a guy who's getting out-rebounded this series in the fourth quarter by Josh Hart. Now, Josh Hart's always been a guy, certainly now with the Knicks, because he plays so many minutes under Tom Thibodeau. Josh Hart plays a lot of minutes and is a hard-nosed, gritty player, grabbing rebounds. 7 feet, I cannot stress this enough, 7 feet, 2 inches tall, 2 fourth-quarter rebounds. He's made 3 shots the whole series in the fourth quarter. At this point, again, and this is what I've sort of thought about after that game was over yesterday afternoon. And to this point, I've been thinking, okay, obviously I'm right in the Embiid thing. Like I've been right for a long time, and that's obviously shown itself to be the case now. Joel Embiid is not a reliable player. You cannot count on him when your season is on the line, when you need him the most. You've never been able to say those words about one Joel Embiid. You just simply have not. The data is obvious. But one thing I pride myself on, or try to, and what I try to pride the show on, is not just complaining about problems, not just saying, oh, this guy's terrible, this guy. Well, how do we fix it? Anybody can complain about the problem. What are we going to do about the solution? Well, to me, there are two courses of action, one that is completely in the Sixers' control, and one is kind of a wait-and-see type of game to be able to ensure that these numerous fourth-quarter collapses do not continue to occur. The first one is completely in the Sixers' control. If the excuse for the Sixers and for Joel Embiid not performing in the fourth quarter is injuries, then I propose this. As a broad term, I'm not in favor of load management. Matter of fact, and my guy Barry Grant Jr., All Even Podcast, was all over this months ago. Subscribe to All Even. That some recent studies have came out saying load management is actually not that good for you, especially for older players, that the more you play, the more your muscles are involved. Like basically, the more you're sitting down, we've known this for years, the more you're sitting down, the less healthy it is for you, right? Getting out and being mobile, being active. So load management, and generally speaking, is not that good for you. But certain players, I'm sorry, Kawhi Leonard has to load manage. He has to. I mean, we're seeing right now, Kawhi Leonard's played more games this year than he has, I think, in almost a decade, going back to his days in San Antonio, and he's not available for the Clippers. He's out in game one, played the next two, out yesterday. I think you'd have to add Joel Embiid to that list. I think at this point in the game, not only would I load manage Joel Embiid, I'm not kidding when I say this. I get it's going to cost him a lot of money and a lot of awards, and I don't know if he'll be in favor of this. Don't play Joel Embiid until, if we're going to look at the sports calendar, don't play Joel Embiid until NFL Conference Championship game weekend. Don't play until late January. Sit out October, November, December. He can practice with the team. He can work with the team. Treat him essentially as an injured player for the first 3 months of the season. I think that's the only way, because if the excuse is, oh, his body wears down, well, let's test that theory next season. The second thing is, for Philadelphia, that this is to a degree in their control, and also we just hope, some of it's kind of just hoping something falls in your favor. I've said for a week, 2 weeks rather, that I've been consistent for 2 weeks to the day that the Los Angeles Lakers, from the time that they got the draw that they did in the play-in tournament, their season would end before the second round started. I've been consistent on that, and I feel great about that. Coming to game five tonight when they play the Nuggets, that more on that at the end of the show. That, again, if they lost the Pelicans, they would lose to either the Warriors or the Kings because both teams owned them that season. If they beat the Pelicans, which they did, they run into the defending champion Nuggets, who literally owned them. They were not beating them in a seven-game series. And because of that, because LeBron's a billionaire, so money's not the issue, because he's past winning MVPs, he's not that type of player anymore, but he's still great. Averaging 25 a game, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, something like that, or 7 assists, 8 rebounds. The Lakers at this particular point in time, with Anthony Davis being a year older, with them getting another head coach with him with the Lakers, the roster's good. It's not special. The Sixers have a lot of cap space after the James Harden trade, which is why it was one of the reasons it was a brilliant move by Daryl Morey. Harden was great yesterday. Just give it time. I think the Philadelphia 76ers are the single most attractive destination for LeBron James. And the reason I say that as it pertains to Joel Embiid not showing up in the fourth quarter is, contrary to what Skip Bayless or any other disingenuous LeBron James hater says, LeBron's about the two or three most clutchest players in the history of the NBA. We won't even talk about historically. We can do that another day, another segment. Just in these playoffs, against the Denver Nuggets, who lead 3-1, can't say it's because LeBron hadn't shown up in the fourth quarter. Here's LeBron James's fourth quarter stats against the Denver Nuggets, okay? He scored 40 points, grabbed 2.3 rebounds a game. Really, that's just say about 10 points a game, 2.3 rebounds, or 10 points a quarter per fourth quarter, 2.3 rebounds, shooting 57% from the field, 33% from three-point range. He's a minus three, which isn't great, but it's better than Joel Embiid's minus four, and is doing so in about the same time Embiid's on the floor, about 10 minutes. So if you have LeBron James out there, by the way, LeBron, for the record, averages 33.6 points per game in elimination games. And again, heard he wasn't clutch. That's beside the point. You had LeBron on this Philly team. I've been saying this for the longest time. LeBron's the best player on the team. Stop. LeBron's better than Embiid. LeBron, Embiid, Maxey. You may have to move off Tobias Harris. Maybe you can keep him. Maybe you have to move off a couple bench guys, but who cares? That is with Nick Nurse as the coach, that they're easily the favorites to win the East, even over Boston. Probably the favorites to win the championship at that point, so that you won't have to rely on Joel Embiid to take you home in the fourth quarter, because he's just not that guy. We have seven years of evidence in the playoffs that he's not. He's never been past the second round. We'll show you one more time in the fourth quarter. He's been abysmal in this series. 6.8 points, 0.5 rebounds as a 7'2" center, shooting 16% from the field, 12% from three, and is a minus four when he's on the floor. The facts, the stats, the analytics, the film, all of it scream at the top of their lungs, you can't rely on Joel Embiid to come up big for you in the fourth quarter or just in general once the playoffs roll around. So then get a guy that can. Now, LeBron may not leave the Lakers. I think that'd be an ill-advised decision. And that's putting it mildly. I don't think he can win a championship anymore with this Lakers team, with that front office. But Philly? Oh, yeah. Oh, that is not only a contender. That is a front runner to win the championship. Look at the comments here. Patrick Brown, sunswept. That's all that needs to be said. It does. Grady Edwards, what about the Knicks for LeBron? Let me put it this way. I think Giannis would be a better fit with the Knicks, and I've been consistent on this. I think Giannis has already played his last game as a Buck if he doesn't play the rest of the series. And I think Giannis may will ask out, because there's going to be another head coach in Milwaukee. The fit with Dame doesn't work. Like, you can't just chalk this season up to, I know I'm getting off of a tangent, but I'll get back to your question, Grady, that for the Bucks, well, they're down 3-1 because Dame and Giannis are hurt. Obviously, that has not exactly helped matters to not have Giannis is two of the three best players in the world. Dame is two of the worst case 15 best players in the world. Yeah, obviously, you'd rather have them out there. But I picked Indiana. I said coming into the series, if Giannis plays, if Giannis doesn't play, I'm still picking the Pacers. So I don't think, given the late season struggles, you can't just chalk the season up to, oh, well, they were injured. Well, they weren't injured at the end of the regular season. Nonetheless, Grady says, what about the Knicks for LeBron? So would I not suggest it for LeBron? No. But I do think a Giannis Jalen Brunson tandem, now that's scary. That's a pick and roll that is terrifying for the NBA. For LeBron, he's a ball dominant player. So is Jalen Brunson. LeBron runs the offense for the Lakers. Brunson runs the offense for the Knicks. Obviously, the Knicks, adding LeBron James to the Knicks would make them a better basketball team. No question. I don't know if the fit is perfect. Now, if they can't upgrade beyond LeBron, which it's hard to, you know, Giannis, that's about all they could do. Then you obviously you bring in LeBron James if he wants to play for your franchise. But again, I've said I think the three most likely destinations for LeBron, if he leaves the Lakers, which I think he should, are Sixers number one, Warriors number two, Heat number three. So I just don't. The only flaw in LeBron's game, and it's the only flaw, true flaw, he really can't play off the ball. That's never been his game. And that's really not Jalen Brunson's game. By the way, it's why Jalen Brunson never truly reached the highs that we're seeing him reach now when he's with Luka. It's not that Luka's not a good teammate or whatever. No. But Luka's an on-ball player. So is Jalen Brunson. Why has Luka and Kyrie worked as a tandem? Because Kyrie can play off the ball. So that's sort of my thought on that. Grady, as far as for Kevin Durant, he sold his soul the moment he went to Golden State. I think the man has come back to OKC and right that wrong. Dude just hasn't been the same since. Again, as I said early in the show, the mistake Kevin Durant made, everybody crushes him for the move to Golden State. Well, guess what? He had a lot of success in Golden State. For somebody to leave, again, I'm not going to say it's equal to with Tyreek Hill leaving the Chiefs because at least he'd already won before. But yeah, Tyreek, you get your money and your stats in Miami. You're not sniffing a Super Bowl. You know, your buddies Patrick and Travis and Chris Jones and your coach Andy Reid, they're winning a lot. Matter of fact, they have not won a championship since you were traded. So I'm not saying it's totally comparable, but I don't think he was ever going to win in Oklahoma City. And it's, you know, one could say, well, they were up 3-1 on a 73-win team, and it took Klay Thompson going berserk in Game 6 just to get it to a Game 7. I get that, but stylistically speaking, we've seen Westbrook. Since KD left, Westbrook has a little KD-esque. He's won one playoff series. He barely played that series. That was in 2020 when he was with the Rockets. They were actually up on the Thunder, who he obviously used to play for. But I do not think Russell Westbrook could have been a part of a championship-winning team as the second-best player. I simply don't. So KD leaving, I do not fault him for that. Certainly joining Golden State, and you say, well, you're a biased Warriors fan. No. Golden State, this is going to sound so cliche, but they play basketball the right way. You know who gets the last shot? The guy that's open. You know who, again, committing to the defensive end, committing to sharing the basketball, not playing ISO. That's why I love Mark Jackson. I think it's a crime that he has not been offered another head coaching job since the Warriors fired him. But Steve Kerr was a better fit for this team and certainly a better fit for the Splash Brothers. And I don't think Draymond could have reached the heights that he reached without Steve Kerr. Grady says, that's where we disagree. I think they won the title within 2 years. They acquired Sabonis and Oladipo. Well, Sabonis, too, is somebody that I don't think could have reached his peak with Russ. And frankly, too, Oladipo, obviously he was with Orlando at that point, is, again, Oladipo's another sort of on-ball guy. That's why he had so much success briefly in Indiana, has been at times, again, since he's dealt with a lot of injuries, which just sucks, but was good in Miami for a time, right? But again, stylistically, I just don't know if those guys would have fit. To me, the best thing to do with KD and Westbrook, if KD stayed, is putting a lot of shooters around them. Obviously, they kept Serge Ibaka as sort of the defensive mastermind wizard. But again, you know, Oklahoma City would have tried to upgrade, or did upgrade, as you said, Grady, by adding Sabonis and by adding Oladipo. But who's to say the Warriors wouldn't have? Because you got to remember this. The Warriors bench looked very, very, very different in 2017 than it did in 2016. Heck, some of their starters. They moved off Harrison Barnes, Andrew Bogut, Festus Ezeli, Barbosa, Brandon Rush, Maurice Spates. They moved off almost their entire bench. Replaced them with David West, JaVale McGee, guys like that. The reason they had to move those guys is because KD was taking up cap space. And again, he was taking up a spot in the starting lineup that Harrison Barnes once occupied. So you had to move him. But who's to say they wouldn't have turned those pieces into another player, whether it been that year or a year after? So, again, that I think you're not necessarily wrong, Grady, but I think you're speaking under the assumption that the Warriors would not have improved, which I think they would have. The fact that they were going after Kevin Durant tells me, okay, that was the big star they were going after. But knowing Bob Myers and Steve Kerr, they had a backup plan. Again, I don't have sources in the Bay Area that have told me that, but it would not shock me if that's the case. But who the heck leaves Steph Curry for the Brooklyn? Yeah, that will never make sense in my mind, other than the fact that, as I talked about earlier, KD, because he's very active on social media, that's putting it mildly, has rabbit ears and listen to what idiots on the internet said about it. Well, those rings don't count. Okay. Okay. Go back to your basement and, in the words of Charles Barkley, having cookie crumbles on your stomach with your drawers on. That's a Charles Barkley quote. I'm not smart enough to have come up with that. I love Chuck. It's the best show on television. Anywho, moving on to the NFL draft, which, again, a lot happened in the six rounds that followed after my reaction to round one of the draft on Friday's show. Obviously, we also did a Grid Network show, the Grid Network 2024 NFL Draft live reaction show, which we did on Thursday. We ended up having to split into two streams because for some reason, the first stream ended up going out. We ended up transitioning to another stream and tons of people came in. Literally hundreds of people tuned into the show live at one point. So that was really cool. And again, shout out to everybody for tuning into that show. But we did that. I did some reaction carving up the day after. Well, the draft has concluded. And I think there are three teams that won the draft. It's hard to say somebody won the draft because you haven't even seen these guys in the NFL yet. Like, there's guys, Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, Joe Alt. Like, those three guys, I am very confident will be superstars in the NFL. But it's hard to say. I don't know if the fourth round safety is going to be a Pro Bowler or if he's going to be out of the league in 2 years. I don't know. We don't know until we see it. But teams that I think, as we sit here today, had good drafts. It's hard. You can't say great draft until you've seen him play. And three teams as well that did not have bad drafts. We don't know if they're bad until we see them play. But as we sit here today, I'm thinking, I don't know about that. So three teams that I think had great drafts. I'm going to start with my Pittsburgh Steelers. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers had a really good draft. So you see the picks right there. Troy Fatanu out of Washington. The Steelers needed a tackle. They needed to upgrade the offensive line. 2 years ago, the Steelers had a terrible O-line. They drafted Broderick Jones, who was good last year out of Oklahoma. You add Troy Fatanu out of Washington, who's got the potential to be really good. Then you go on and you add a center, Zach Frazier out of West Virginia. Folks, center was the single biggest weak point as a Steelers fan, I'm saying this, of the Steelers O-line. They address it in the second round. Love it. Zach Frazier. Well, you trade Deontay Johnson to the Carolina Panthers, so who's going to be your number two guy? Well, Roman Wilson. Unless the Steelers go after Debo or Ayuk, which I'm crossing my fingers, Omar Khan, you can pull it off, my man. But Roman Wilson, who is, to me, the anti-Deontay Johnson. Not quite as talented, but sure hands and an effort guy. Guy who doesn't care to block. A guy who doesn't care to dive on a loose ball in the field. Deontay Johnson didn't do that last season or throughout his time in Pittsburgh. Love the pick. You add a receiver. Then you go out and get Peyton Wilson. You already got Patrick Queen, the linebacker from the Ravens, who's a tremendous player. You add to what was the only weakness of your defense, linebacker. You add another guard, Mason McCormick, in the fourth round. Then you obviously take a D lineman, Logan Lee, out of Iowa, and a corner, Ryan Watts, out of Texas. The Steelers kind of struggle at corner, so again, adding one was great there. So for my Steelers, after this thing, I mean, as this is playing out, I'm like, a great pick. Love that. Yep, that works. Okay, that fits too. Loved it. And there were some draft fails, even some on the grid. Again, I'm not taking shots at anybody because I thought Mike Guido, EJ Savage did a fantastic job throughout the show talking about the draft picks, breaking everything down. Our guests were fantastic as well. But when the Steelers were on the clock, you know, some of those guys were saying, hey, they may go corner here. They may go Cooper DeJean, who ended up going to Philly in the second round. I'm like, God, we're fine defensively. Could we add players? Sure. It's Mike Tomlin. You got TJ Watt and Mika Fitzpatrick and Patrick Queen. They're fine on defense. It's offense that's the problem. And in particular, some of the weapon. You added some. You added Roman Wilson. You sure up your offensive line. Loved the draft of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So they get a passing grade for me. Again, I can't give A pluses. I am not Pro Football Focus. I can't give an A plus until I see them play. But as of right now, as we sit here today, love the draft that Omar Khan put together. Another team that I really like their draft, LA Chargers. Love their draft, okay? You take Joe Alt, fifth overall out of Notre Dame. Could you have taken, Malik Nabers, who went to the Giants one pick later? Of course. They got a thin receiving core. But they said, you know what? All-time great left tackles usually go very high in the draft. I think Joe Alt is a we got to see him play, but a surefire multi-time Pro Bowler and All-Pro guy. He is 6'9". He's a freak of nature. And by the way, drafting a Notre Dame tackle is about the equivalent of drafting an Iowa tight end. They're usually a surefire bet to succeed in the NFL. So Joe Alt, love the pick. But they're kind of thin at wide receiver. So what they do? Top of the second round, Ladd McConkey out of Georgia. Watched a lot of Georgia games last year and throughout, you know, really my time as a football fan because I'm an SEC guy. Go Vols. Ladd McConkey is a good possession receiver. He's fast. He can get open for Justin Herbert. Then they add Junior Colson, a linebacker. They add a defensive lineman from Alabama. They add two corners after that. The Chargers defense last year, in large part because of Brandon Staley, but was not good. Matter of fact, it was awful. So what do? They address a tackle. They address wide receiver. And then their next four picks are defense. Then they get a running back. Okay, they're Austin Eckler. We know the situation there. Then they get a receiver, actually two receivers. Brennan Rice, who's actually Jerry Rice's son out of USC, and Cornelius Johnson from Michigan. Brennan Rice, I thought was going to go around the fifth round. The fact that he went to the seventh was an absolute positive steal. I thought he was excellent with Caleb Williams last year at USC. Loved him. So the fact that the Chargers got him in round seven, I think he's going to be fantastic. And they needed receiver help. They're at this point kind of left with Quentin Johnson and my man out of Tennessee, Josh Palmer. That was about it because Mike Williams left to go to the Jets. They moved Keenan Allen to the Chicago Bears. Like, they needed weapons, and they needed to add to the offensive line, and they needed to add to their defense. Check, check, check. I'm telling you, folks, Jim Harbaugh is going to do something special with the Chargers. Everywhere that man goes, he's successful. So NFL, college, doesn't matter. He sees a rebuilding situation and almost immediately fixes it. So love the picks for Jim Harbaugh. Last team. And this is one of the teams I was really curious to see what they did in the draft. And I thought, I can't say they aced it because we got to see the guys play. But as we sit here today, I couldn't have loved the Patriots draft anymore. I couldn't have loved it anymore. Put it up here. You take Drake May. Now, I don't know if Drake May is going to pan out. Okay, he's a project, and I don't think he's ready to play year one. I think that's a guy you're going to have to sit for a little bit, you know, be able to develop him behind Jacoby Brissett. But if he hits his ceiling, that's a big if, but if he does, Patriots got themselves a really special player in their hands. Now, again, it's a big if because his floor is really bad. But if he hits his ceiling, I think he could be the next Justin Herbert. So what do? Patriots are the single least talented, I think even including the Panthers, the single least talented wide receiving core and weapons, you know, weapons team in the NFL. That's what they do. They get Jalen Polk out of Washington, who is Michael Penix's number two guy. Love the pick. Then they get Kaden Wallace, offensive tackle, Penn State. They get Layden Robinson, guard, Javon Baker, receiver. Then they take a corner, Marcellus Dial out of South Carolina. Then they take my man, Joe Milton. Shout out to Joe Milton out of Tennessee. Then they take Jaheim Bell out of Florida State. Folks, this is part of the reason that I was completely in favor of the Patriots moving on from Belichick. Because the league is not where Bill is. It's why I hear, like, oh, Belichick to the Cowboys. It won't work. Belichick to the Eagles. It won't work. Will he coach your defense to be only really good? Yeah, but he doesn't know how to put together staff. And his drafts, Patriots fans can attest, the last decade, his drafts have been atrocious. Gerard Mayo, Elliott Wolf, you know, they have an actual GM running the thing now in New England. Job well done. The Patriots, oh, they go defense, and they go, no. I said, you know, we are probably the least talented team in the NFL in offense. So we're going to go offense throughout the whole draft, chalk offense outside of one player. Every player was an offensive player for the Patriots. Loved that. And that, to me, signals, and I talked about it on Friday, that if you look back to the early 90s, you don't even talk about, we don't have to go back to Brady. We can go all the way back to Bledsoe. The starting quarterbacks for the Patriots. Bledsoe, obviously Brady for two decades, greatest quarterback ever. Then you go to, yeah, the 1 year with Cam, that was kind of a weird fit. Then Mac Jones, and then Bailey Zappi at the end of last season. What do those guys have in common? Pocket quarterbacks. Now, Tom could move a little bit. Bledsoe, but mostly guys relegated to the pocket. Not special arm strength, although I thought Brady was always underrated in that regard. Them drafting Drake May, I don't know if this is going to work. I don't know if this kid's going to develop into being what he's capable of being. That's why I'm skeptical of him. It's why I liked Penix more. But the fact that they were willing to roll the dice with kind of a project at quarterback with a high ceiling tells me, okay, the identity of this organization is starting to change into that of which we see the successful franchises today in the NFL. So from that perspective, like for real, job well done for the Patriots, job well done for the Chargers, and let's go, job well done for my Pittsburgh Steelers. And by the way, I didn't have a graphic for this, but I did have three honorable mentions. I thought Detroit had a really good draft. I thought Chicago, obviously, adding Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze. They didn't really do much after that because they only had three picks after that. And I thought the New York Jets actually had a sneaky good draft. So those three honorable mentions. The teams that I was like, okay, I don't know what the plan is here. I don't know what direction they're thinking. First team's the Las Vegas Raiders. Okay, we could go and put up their draft. They took Brock Bowers in the first round. As I said on Friday, Brock Bowers is a freak athlete. I saw this kid play in person at Neyland Stadium, seeing my Vols play Georgia. He doesn't look like everybody else. It's the speed, the hands, the route, everything. The guy's incredible. How does he fit with the Raiders? They already have Michael Mayer. Again, unless they played a lot of 12 personnel, run the football, I guess, but I don't know if I love that pick. They take Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon, the center. They take a tackle, Delmar Glaze out of Maryland, a corner, DeCamarion Richardson, Mississippi State, Tommy Eichenberg out of Ohio State, a linebacker, running back Dylan Lobby out of I think is how you say his name, from New Hampshire, safety Trey Taylor out of Air Force, and MJ Devonshire out of Pittsburgh. Here's why I don't really get the Raiders, okay? It wouldn't have hurt you to take a quarterback in this draft, right? Because we know the Raiders don't have the answer. Gardner Minshew, everybody likes Gardner Minshew, but he's obviously not a franchise quarterback. And Aiden O'Connell's fine, but I mean, the Raiders won games last year where Aiden O'Connell didn't complete a pass in the last three quarters. Literally, they did that on Christmas against Kansas City. Are they trying to... I don't think they're bad enough to tank. I certainly don't think that their new head coach, Antonio Pierce, would even think about tanking. Know how he is an intense defensive head coach. But the offensive fit is odd. Defensively, I'm not sure how those guys fit into what they're trying to do in Vegas as well. And Spencer Rattler, Joe Milton, the kid out of Toledo. I mean, these guys were on the board, and they basically passed on all of them, which I found odd. I mean, again, I don't think even the worst thing ever. Like, the Patriots don't need Joe Milton at all. But it's always, you know, Washington didn't need Kirk Cousins in 2012 when they took RG3 second overall. But as it turned out, Kirk Cousins ended up being the guy. Not saying one of these quarterbacks could have been the guy for the Raiders, but at least get him in the building. I mean, it feels like a safer bet than a safety. So for the Raiders, really weird draft. Second team's in my home state of Tennessee. Tennessee Titans, what are we doing? What are we doing? They go tackle J.C. Latham out of Alabama. I really like the pick. They go Tavondre Sweat out of Texas. Really nice player, second round, defensive lineman. They go linebacker Cedric Gray, corner Jarvis Brownlee. Then they finally go another offensive player in Jaquan Jackson out of Tulane, James Williams from Miami, and Jalen Harrell, edge rusher out of Michigan. So the Tennessee Titans, who had one of the worst offensive lines in the league, who have a new quarterback in Will Levis, who moved off Derrick Henry, who went to the Baltimore Ravens, they draft two offensive players, which is odd given the fact that their new head coach is an offensive guy. Like, this usually we see defensive head coaches when they first come in, man, they go all defense. That's kind of what Pete Carroll did when he came into Seattle. Offensive guys go all in on offense. We saw Jim Harbaugh kind of do that at portions with the Chargers. Well, I love their draft. What's the objective with the Tennessee Titans? Like, again, I actually like Tennessee's receiving core a little bit. Again, they did add a receiver. Go and put it back up one more time. They did add Jaquan Jackson. They have D-Hop. They had the other kid that they drafted. I'm forgetting his name. They drafted out of Arkansas a couple years ago. His name escapes me. But they don't go running back. They really don't address the offensive line at all outside of J.C. Latham when their O-line sucked last year and has the last couple of years. So I thought that was a weird draft for the Titans. And finally, you know, that sign outside of that restaurant in Charlotte, North Carolina, like I said, y'all, don't let the idiot egomaniacal owner come into your building. By the way, soft owner come into your building and take your hats off again. Y'all were 100% right. What the blank are the Carolina Panthers doing? I really like their first couple picks. Xavier Legette out of South Carolina, Jonathan Brooks out of Texas. After that, I don't know what they're doing. They take a linebacker out of Kentucky. They were not terrible at linebacker last year. The defense for the Panthers actually wasn't bad. Jatavion Sanders out of Texas, tight end. Charles Smith-Wade out of Washington State, a corner, a defensive lineman, Jamin Cromutty, and a linebacker, Michael Barra, out of Michigan. So are we trying to end Bryce Young's career? What are you doing? I get you have a lack of picks because you made a dumb trade with Chicago, and that's the reason the Bears have Caleb Williams and you don't. But the Panthers have the worst offensive line in the league last season. Bryce Young was getting destroyed out there at 5'9", nonetheless. And you don't draft a single offensive lineman? Listen, the Panthers have a lot of problems. Wide receiver was one of them. They went and got Xavier Legette out of South Carolina. An interior lineman, like, would it kill them? So, yeah, listen, David Tepper, you screw up a lot of things with the Carolina Panthers. You dump beer on people and you take hat people. You get pissed off with people putting offensive signs outside the restaurant, simply stating that the GM and coach, crazy idea, should make draft picks. This was hated Carolina's draft. And by the way, honorable mentions include the Browns, Miami Dolphins, and Buffalo Bills. But those three in particular did not like their drafts at all. Let's look at the comments here. What do we got? Oh, my gosh. See, that's why I love Grady. He says they need to give AB the dignity to play one last season in Pittsburgh, Bryson. Yes, listen, he can bring CTE, ESPN, and he can bring everybody. Yeah. Whew. Imagine Russell. You imagine a locker room with Russell Wilson and Antonio Brown. Holy cow. You want to talk about some stories to league carving it up. My gosh. Let's see. Grady, who's a Patriots. He's like a Patriots and Panthers fan. Don't hate the Drake May pick at all. I just wish they wouldn't let him wear number 10 like Mac Jones and Jimmy Garoppolo. But I like our draft, though. With solid. I really like New England's draft. I think what you saw starting with the Drake May pick is a bit of a shift in their identity and how they're going to approach trying to win football games. So I really liked what they did. Again, I don't know if Drake May is going to be the guy. I don't know that. If he reaches a ceiling, he'll be really special. If he doesn't, he won't be very good at all. Like, it's kind of a boom or bust type of thing. But the fact that they went with that over J.J. McCarthy, who, and I like the kid, he seems like a nice kid, won a championship at Michigan, a game manager. That's why I don't love the Vikings picking him. So, you know, for the Patriot draft, really, really love it, Grady. He says, I think he'll be good, to be honest. Just don't force him out there. Totally agree with you, Grady, that this is the typical, again, and even project guys. I talked about this with Anthony Richardson last year, that we say with projects, oh, don't play. Well, my thing with Anthony Richardson was, well, he has a good O-line. He's got Jonathan Taylor. He's got Michael Pittman Jr. He's got a good offensive head coach. We saw what he did with Jalen Hurts. Like, get him out there as soon as possible. What's sitting on the bench going to do for him? In the case of Drake May, as much as I love the Patriots draft, there's still a ways to go. There's still some pieces to put together. Go ahead and roll up Brissett. See what you. My guess is this probably means Zappi's gone out of New England with them taking Joe Milton, unless they just don't like him in camp at all. Which my guess is, if nothing else, I say this as a Vols fan. I was a much higher on Hendon Hooker than Joe Milton for the simple fact that I thought Hendon Hooker was able to quickly make decisions, even though his arm strength doesn't even come close, folks. Joe Milton, I'm not kidding, threw an orange 100 yards. Like, his arm strength is freakish. But the ability to read the field quickly, Hendon Hooker had that down. But raw ability is what put Joe Milton in the spot. So I think the Patriots will like him just for that and at least keep him this year. We'll see beyond that. But listen, wishing him all the best, because Joe Milton was the ultimate teammate at Tennessee. He was, people forget this, not to, you know, wax poetic about Joe Milton, not to make this into a segment of the Vol View, but this was a guy who transferred from Michigan to Tennessee in 2021, was the starter, beat out Hendon Hooker in camp, was the starter for the first two games, got benched against Pitt in the second game. Hendon Hooker came in, didn't look back. Vols ended up getting as high to being the number one team in the country. Hendon Hooker should have been a Heisman finalist. That's beside the point. Joe Milton, instead of transferring, stays. I'm sorry. Hendon Hooker was the quarterback for the rest of 2021 and all throughout 2022, except for one game, in which that was the game he got injured. Joe Milton decided to stay. Him and Hendon Hooker were very close, so I really liked that as well. Grace asks, do they not think Aiden O'Connell can be the franchise guy? Or do I not think Aiden O'Connell can be the franchise guy? I just don't see special with him. He's got some nice qualities. Like he's pretty good for the pocket, kind of a typical pocket thrower. He's a good distributor, typical, again, sort of game manager type. If Aiden O'Connell's your backup, that's a really good backup to have. As it turned out, he was actually better than Jimmy Garoppolo last season because we saw what the Raiders did as time went on. And again, they did make a coaching change, but still. So if franchise, you got to keep in mind too, Grady, they're in the same division with Patrick Mahomes. And they're also in the same division with Justin Herbert. We'll see what happens with Bo Nix. He's with Sean Payton, and Sean Payton I trust. But I didn't like the direction the Raiders went at all. As far as the Titans, as far as Carolina, what are you doing? Man, both of them had some odd drafts. By the way, the Cowboys had a weird draft as well. So let's dedicate a whole segment to him, right? Let's dedicate a whole segment to America's team, the Dallas Cowboys.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah! So as far as the Cowboys draft, okay, and as far as the Cowboys offseason, I said it about a month ago. I maintain it today, and my resolve has only grown stronger on this take. I think the Dallas Cowboys are trying to make Dak Prescott's job as hard as possible so that they can get him on a discount. I honest to God believe that. Because if you look at, Jerry Jones said all in. Of course, nobody in their right mind believed Jerry Jones when he said, we're going all in, blah, blah, blah. But their only big, I say big in quotes, free agent signing was Eric Kendricks, who's a linebacker. Does it help them? Sure. I mean, I guess with Leighton Vander Esch retiring, it sort of helps, but I don't think Eric Kendricks is going to be the difference in you winning a Super Bowl or not. You let a bunch of players go. You let your starting center go. You let a number of other defensive starters go. But worst of all, you can replace those guys. Worst of all, they let Tyron Smith go, who's one of the premier three or four best left tackles in football. Well, he gets hurt a lot. Yeah, well, your backup's awful. Now, they addressed, again, they got the kick Guyton in the first round. I actually liked that pick by Dallas. I really did. To me, that's, if your needs on your team are offensive line and receiver, go offensive line first, because A, they're historically more valuable, and B, the great offensive lineman historically, the earlier you take them, the better player you get. Receiver, you can get an undrafted guy, you can get a first overall pick, it doesn't matter. It does matter, you know, who you take, but generally, great receivers come different shapes, different sizes, different rounds. Sometimes they don't come in a round at all, they come undrafted. Like, the great offensive linemen usually come in the first couple of rounds or so. So in that regard, I don't hate the Dallas Cowboys taking the guy they took. I didn't like them moving off Tyron Smith, but Dallas in this draft, I've lost it here. Okay, if I can pull this up, the Dallas Cowboys draft, and we didn't have a graphic for this. So they go Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma, liked the pick. They go Marshawn Nealon, who's an edge rusher out of Western Michigan. Okay, you already had some pretty good edge rusher. You actually let one of them go last season, or a couple of them go. Dorrance Armstrong was really productive. Cooper Beebe, Out of Kansas State, I thought it was a steal in the third round. Like, I think that guy's going to be productive. Again, Cowboys addressing the O-line. But then they go a linebacker out of Notre Dame. And then they go a corner. They got Trayvon Diggs and Stephon Gilmore and Deron Bland. They're fine at corner. I don't know what they're doing there. Then they finally, it takes until the sixth round, to take Ryan Flournoy, as how you say his name, out of Southeast Missouri State. As their only receiver pick, they take a tackle, Nathan Thomas, and then a defensive lineman, Justin Rogers. Two of their first three picks I thought were great, addressing the O-line. I thought Cooper Beebe falling to the third round was a steal for them. They don't really, I mean, I guess a linebacker helps. I don't think it's going to do wonders for them. A corner who's probably not going to be a feel at all. You got Trayvon Diggs. You got Stephon Gilmore. You got maybe the best corner tandem in the league. You got Deron Bland, who, while he is to a certain degree like Trayvon Diggs, at least when Diggs first came in the league as the gambler, led the league in pick sixes in NFL history for a single season. Like, he's a pretty good player. Not to mention the fact that a receiving core that I said all, even when I picked the Cowboys to go to the Super Bowl, because I thought Dak and CD would be enough to get them there. It obviously wasn't. Couldn't even get them out of round one. But a receiving core that I kept beating the drum all of last season. It's why up until Lamar went on a crazy stretch at the end of the season, I would have absolutely voted Dak Prescott MVP. Because CeeDee Lamb is a spectacular talent. Spectacular player. Jake Ferguson's a good tight end. Brandon Cooks, you know, a lot of people defending Brandon Cooks, a lot of Cowboys fans have said, hey, Bryce, you're underrating Brandon Cooks, am I? I looked at the 14 number two receivers that made the playoffs that were on playoff teams. I looked at all 14 playoff teams, number two guys. I had only three number two receivers as better than Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks better than three other guys. Gabe Davis, Elijah Moore, and Deontay Johnson for my Steelers. That's it. Every other number two guy, Deebo Samuel, Jameson Williams, Chris Godwin, Devontae Smith, Cooper Kupp, Romeo Doubs, Rashee Rice, Tank Dell, Jalen Waddle. Like, all of those guys are better players right now than Brandon Cooks, who, by the way, is on his fifth team. Right? Fifth team in a decade. After that, it's Jalen Tolbert, who can't separate. After that, it was Michael Gallup, who you released because he's no longer productive. You then draft a receiver in the sixth round instead of in the first, you know, three or four. And today, as the cherry on top, you sign Ezekiel Elliott, who averaged 3.5 yards a carry last year. Now, Zeke, to me, is still really good as a short yardage back on a third or fourth and one situation as a goal line guy. He had 12 rushing touchdowns his last year in Dallas. But if we're talking about being your number one running back, well, Zeke's not going to be the number one guy. Well, who is then? Rico Dowdle? 5'5", and I think that's literally how tall he is. 5'5", Deuce Vaughn. So you're weak at the running back position. I think your offensive line will be serviceable because I think your two offensive line picks, actually, your first two offensive line picks anyway, will actually be pretty good players. And Zach Martin, while he's not the player he was, is still good. Who's Dak going to throw to? And who's going to support Dak in terms of the running game? So I thought Dallas's draft was not awful like the Carolinas or Tennessee's, but it was weird. It didn't address, after the first three picks, it didn't really address their needs that much. And I think at this particular point in time, you have I've talked about this at length, that I think Jerry and Dak are absolutely unequivocally on the same page as it pertains to Dak playing the last year of his contract and becoming an unrestricted free agent in the spring of 2025. I firmly believe that. I think Jerry and Dak are all of that same mindset. But then what for the Cowboys? Well, they draft a quarterback. Well, you lucked into your last two in Romo and Dak, and asked the Chicago Bears, who may have now finally found their guy. It's not as easy as some may think. You know, not everybody can be the Green Bay Packers. Go from Hall of Famer Brett Favre to Hall of Famer Aaron Rodgers to, we'll see, but if he continues what he's doing, excellent quarterback in Jordan Love. That's just not how it works. Just to go from Romo to Dak is rare. To go from Romo to Dak to a guy who's going to be even close to even Dak? I mean, first-round quarterbacks, which is historically where the all-time greats come from. Brady's an exception. Montana's an exception. You look at Mahomes first round, Elway first overall pick, Manning first overall pick, Dan Marino, you know, first round. Aaron Rodgers was first round. The all-time great quarterbacks. I mean, Drew Brees was at the very top of the second round. Generally, that's where the all-time great players come from at the quarterback position. Even in that, it's a coin flip. It is a literal coin flip as to whether your guy's going to succeed if you draft him the first round. There were six quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks of this draft. All six of them are not going to pan out. Matter of fact, I'd be shocked if more than three of them pan out, because that's usually how it works in the NFL. So I think Dallas is literally, and again, if this is Jerry Jones' way to sort of regain the leverage from Dak, it's weird. Is it pseudo smart? I mean, I don't know. This is the same Jerry Jones who, in a press conference on Thursday, literally revealed to the media that Jonathan Brooks was high up on their draft board, to the point where Stephen Jones, like Mike McCarthy, gives Stephen Jones this, why did he say that? And Stephen Jones kind of like elbows his dad, is like, you know, we probably, you know, don't need to be saying that. And Will McClay's on the other side of Jerry saying, well, there's a lot of players we have high on our board. And of course, Jonathan Brooks gets taken almost immediately in the second round by the Panthers. It was just a, this is why I have been banging this table since Dak became a free agent briefly in 2021. I said, Dak, this organization is not about winning championships. Okay. It's about getting big ratings, you know, being the most watched team on Thanksgiving and Fox and NBC and CBS. It's not about winning in the playoffs. And if it is, only reason it'll matter to Jerry is if he gets the credit. Other than that, he didn't care either way. He done. His free agent moves since Dak has gotten there. Heck, even in the Romo days shows you that's not really what he's about. The 90s deal maker, aggressive Jerry Jones is not the Jerry Jones. Heck, forget 2024 of the last 25 years. That's not how he works. That's not how he does business. He's not a risk taker, is what the last 25 years shows us. It's the idea that, oh yeah, the Dak is what's holding the Cowboys back. Like that is the issue. Just like Romo. Oh, Romo's the issue. You lucked into Dak as a fourth round draft pick who you didn't even want. You wanted Paxton Lynch and Connor Cook over Dak Prescott. For the record, that's another story for another podcast. But I think Dallas's draft was weird. Their offseason has been an absolute disaster. You can argue it's maybe even the worst in the NFL. I mean, at least Carolina's added Deontay Johnson, who I was not a fan of in Pittsburgh, but he's productive. I mean, he's fine. Xavier Legette, good player. Jonathan Brooks. Like, I liked the Panthers' first two picks. After that, it was awful. I think the Cowboys are trying to sabotage Dak to make him cheaper on the market, which isn't going to work because somebody's going to pay for Dak. And also, too, I think I said this a month ago. I say it today. This is going to be the first year of Dak's career since his rookie year because there was no pressure on Dak his rookie year. Like, the pressure on Dak when Romo went down in the preseason in 2016 was, Dak, just keep the ship afloat. Keep the ship afloat. Romo comes back, and we go from there. As it turns out, Dak was so good, they're like, hey, Romo, hey, you know how you've been sitting on the bench all season? Stay on the bench, okay, because this kid's the future. First time, I think, since that year where what pressure is there on Dak? Dak, just stay healthy, put up. You don't have to put up the numbers last year, 36 touchdowns, 9 picks. You don't have to put up MVP statistics like that. 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 11 interceptions, be healthy. Get to the playoffs, do that. Yeah, you're getting your money. You're getting your money from somebody who actually values elite play at the quarterback position, which evidently the Cowboys do not. So you do your thing, Dak. And I don't think, because what? Here's my question. Funny, I mentioned Michael Gallup. He just literally signed with the Raiders today or a few minutes ago for 1 year, $3 million. Here's my question. What is, if you say, well, there is pressure, other than making sure he gets the contract, which he's going to get because he's going to maintain the same productivity we saw last year and that we saw in 2021 and that we saw through the first five games till he got hurt of 2020. What's the pressure? Oh, win a Super Bowl. Dallas isn't good enough to win a Super Bowl. They weren't last year. You're telling me they got better this year? Not to mention the fact Jerry isn't just doing bad business with Dak. He's doing bad business with CeeDee Lamb, too. Amon-Ra St. Brown got paid, and Devontae Smith got paid, and A.J. Brown got paid. You know, Ja'Marr Chase is going to get paid. Then you're going to pay CeeDee. Jerry has this really... Jerry's not as good of a businessman as he gets credit for. Jerry has this bad tendency of when he has a star player or a superstar player, in the case of Dak and CeeDee Lamb, where he waits till the absolute last minute to pay them. Why the heck? CeeDee Lamb's right now in the middle of a contract holdout. Don't blame him, because I'm like, okay, Amon-Ra St. Brown's getting a deal. Devontae Smith, A.J. Brown, all these guys get paid. Why haven't I gotten paid? I had the best statistical season of any receiver in the league last year, and I've been great since I stepped into the league. Why haven't I gotten paid yet? Continued bad business by the Dallas Cowboys, but why are we shocked? Anyways, Grady says, oh, if I can pull up his comment. Really hope Zach Wilson pops off. It would be funny to see all the angry Jets fans. To be honest, Bo Nix will be the day one starter. That quarterbacking room in Denver is awful. Yeah, it's Bo Nix, Jared Stidham, and Zach Wilson. It is. There are better quarterback rooms in the NFL, let's put it that way. But listen, there's signs of, okay, this kid's a pretty good player. Like, yeah, I remember he had one game last year against Kansas City, where he was really good. And Kansas City had a great defense last year. But other than that, again, it's a lot of Zach Wilson's failures do fall on the New York Jets. They do. Bad offensive play callers, not putting an offensive line in front of him to protect him. But some of it, like, you watch these plays, I'm like, God, what does he see out there? So, unless I'm pulling for the kid to succeed, I'm not rooting against Zach Wilson, but I don't think it'll be anything more than an okay backup from here. Okay, he's got good arm strength. You know, there's a lot of quarterbacks that Jamarcus Russell could throw the ball a mile. I mean, Peyton Manning told a story years ago where Jamarcus Russell was at the Manning Passing Academy, and I think he threw the ball like 80 yards and ran the receiver, not, you know, theoretically, into the goalpost. And Peyton just watched, like, oh my God. And we know what Jamarcus Russell amounted to, which was nothing in the NFL. And he was the number one overall pick. Zach Wilson was the number two overall pick a few years ago. So, I mean, he'll be fine. Again, he's with Sean Payton. It's better than being with Nathaniel Hackett, that's putting it mildly. I mean, hey, Russell Wilson's a prime example. Russ was the worst quarterback in the league with Nathaniel Hackett, and at least okay, did throw 26 touchdowns last year. I think Russell's about the 19th best player at his position in the league. But, hey, it's better than Pickett, Trubisky, and Rudolph. So I'll take it, okay? I'll take it. Steelers are building something, though. I'd say, Omar Khan, let me tell you something. If we can add us some Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk, I actually prefer Ayuk because he's younger, less beat up, and I think fits more of a need. That's what the Steelers need. Let me tell you something right now. You add one of them two receivers from San Francisco, well, you may have some. And by the way, Dak Prescott, they won't put anything around you in Dallas. They sure will in Pittsburgh. They put weird drafts around you in Dallas. They don't do that. Omar Khan don't do that. Omar Khan and Mike Tomlin, they know what they're doing now, okay? Just saying right now. All right, last segment. Normally, I wouldn't do a segment like this, but the fact that it is a topic in the national media from people I respect. Could the Lakers come back from a 3-0 deficit to beat the Denver Nuggets? Well, listen. As the old saying goes, it's harder to do than beat a team 11 straight times is beat a team 12 straight times. And of course, the Nuggets were not quite able to do that. Lakers won game four. LeBron was excellent in the fourth quarter. Anthony Davis was excellent through the first three. And the Lakers prolonged the inevitable in extending the series to a game five tonight in Denver, Colorado. Now, reports have said that Jamal Murray, he has an issue with his calf, I think, which again, calves, like I'm always... The KD thing 5 years ago kind of scarred me, where, like, be careful with a calf injury. Could lead to something else far more severe, and hopefully, certainly we're not wishing that Jamal Murray, but it is certainly within the realm of possibility. We don't know the extent of the calf injury, but the reports are that he's questionable. If I can do this just live on air, if there's any updates on Jamal Murray, because, again, he's questionable due to a calf strain. Do we have anything on Jamal Murray? See if it's any reporters have anything. Okay, we got nothing. I'm looking at Twitter right now. Sources I trust, they don't have anything. So, again, game tips off in about 2.5 hours. Obviously, we'll know by then. Denver's not coming back from 3-0. I'm sorry, the Lakers are not coming back from 3-0. Like, what do we do? I love LeBron James. Yeah, he's the best basketball player ever. We'll save that for another day. Anthony Davis has been amazing in this series. Well, Bryson, you know, if you look at the statistics, the Lakers have actually led, if you combine all the games, combine all 48 minutes of this series, put it together. If you really look closely, the Lakers have been in the lead, have been leading the Nuggets through 73% of this series. You know what my response to that is? Yeah, Mahomes has trailed every single Super Bowl he played. You know what his record is in Super Bowls? 3-1. You know what the Nuggets' record is in the series? 3-1. Have we just neglected a general sports truth? Ain't about how you start, it's about how you finish. And if there's one thing we know about the Denver Nuggets, it's that late in games with the Murray-Jokic two-man game, it's darn near impossible to stop. And we know they get stops on the other end. Aaron Gordon kind of spearheading that. KCP is good in the defensive end as well, guarding, you know, some of the smaller guards out there. I love LeBron. Anthony Davis has been, you can't ask for any more from Anthony Davis. For the record, I thought D'Angelo Russell was going to be average to awful throughout. You could argue it's been kind of average because he was horrible in game one, amazing by his standards in game two, could not have been worse in game three, didn't score a point, and really good in game four. So Russell's been good. Austin Reeves has been not great, but fine, productive. You're down 3-1 to the Nuggets. Listen, you can throw in anything. You know, Jamal Murray this, Jamal Murray. Listen, you can say LeBron, you know, he came back from 3-1, a 73-win team. It's 3-1 now. You never, I'll say it again. You know, LeBron James, Etta James, Jesse James, Anthony Davis, Viola Davis, Reese Davis. It don't matter. Nuggets in five. All right, we get some comments and get out of here. This is serious. See, even Grady. Grady's a big-time Lakers fan. He says, we're coming back, Bryce. And then he has the laughing emoji. Like, Grady knows. Lakers fan, you know. You know I was right on you from the beginning. Which Grady was pretty quick to acknowledge. We talked before the series that the chance of the Lakers being Denver was slim. The chance of Lakers being Denver coming into the series was slim. Right now, they're not. They don't exist. There is not a scenario. If Jamal Murray plays, by the way, if Denver's healthy, there is not a scenario which exists in the world that we live in today where the Denver Nuggets become the first team in the history of basketball to blow a 3-0 lead. Well, Boston almost came. Miami was a limited team that was kind of falling apart. Boston finally found their stride. And then once game seven arrived, by the way, Boston would not have won game six if Derek White hadn't come in and saved the day at the last, literally at the last 10th of a second. And game seven, the Heat blew the Celtics off their home floor. I mean, what are we doing? Come on. D'Angelo Russell. Russell Wilson. Kerry Russell. Don't matter. Nuggets in five. All right, that is all the time we have for today's show. Appreciate everybody stopping by as always. Be sure to catch Carving Up Live on Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time right here on YouTube, as well as any and everywhere you get your favorite podcast. Also, be sure to like, share, comment, and please take 2 seconds out of your day. Hit that big red subscribe button down there. It helps the channel grow exponentially. If you have not subscribed, please do so. If you have subscribed, please tell your friends about it, your family about it, everybody know about it, except for your sleeping cat. Quickly, I almost forgot to say happy retirement to Candace Parker, one of the all-time great Tennessee Volunteer athletes, and for the record, one of the all-time great WNBA players, women's basketball players we've ever seen in the history of the game. Candace Parker, for her career, if we can just read off her accomplishments, she's a three-time champion with three different franchises, the Sparks, the Sky, and the Aces. She's a WNBA Finals MVP 2016. She's a two-time regular season MVP. She's a seven-time All-Star. She's a one-time All-Star Game MVP. She's been all WNBA 10 times. Seven of those are first team. She's been she's two-time All-Defensive second team in the WNBA. She's Rookie of the Year. She won Defensive Player of the Year 4 years ago with the Sparks. She led the league in assists 1 year in 2015. She's led the league in rebounds three times. She's an all-time legend. All-time legend. By the way, as far as her college career, with the University of Tennessee Volunteers, with the greatest head coach in the history of women's basketball, all due respect to Gino Auriemma, but we all know it is the late, great Pat Summitt. She won two NCAA championships, went back-to-back in 07 and 08, and also won a NCAA tournament most outstanding player with the University of Tennessee Volunteers. So shout out to Candace Parker. She announced her retirement over the weekend. I saw an interview with Brianna Stewart, who's the MVP player for the New York Liberty, who made the finals a year. Brianna Stewart's a fantastic player, and she was shocked. She was like, oh my God, I can't believe she retired. Fantastic career for Candace Parker. She's going to have an even better off-court career than she did on the court. I truly believe that, and that's saying something. She's an excellent broadcaster already for TNT. She's going to do awesome stuff off the court and continue to have a big-time impact on the basketball community. And listen, Candace, if you're watching, you're probably not, but if you are, there's one thing I have to say. It's one, go Vols. Two, excellent career. And three, I know I'm overstaying my welcome as far as the compliments are concerned. Maybe I'm not. But last compliment, and I honest to God believe this, Coach Summitt would be darn proud of you. I can tell you that right now. No question about that. Shout out to the late, great Pat Summitt. God rest her soul. And shout out to Candace Parker on an all-time great women's basketball career. And of course, being one of the all-time great Tennessee Volunteer athletes. Go Big Orange. All right. Also, I forgot to tell you, be sure to subscribe. Do we have it? Be sure to go subscribe to the Grid Network That is GRYD, the Grid Podcast Network, right here on YouTube, as well as any and everywhere you get your favorite podcast, via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, any and everywhere you get your favorite podcast. Also, be sure to catch Patrick Brown. Check out Patrick Brown's stuff. He writes some great articles for the Grid Network website. The link to that is on the Instagram page. Facebook page, Instagram account, it's all the same thing. But check out the Grid Network's website on Instagram. Patrick Brown writing some great articles on there as well. Dare to be different at the Grid Network. We just had a great NFL draft show. Cowboys camp fan. I had a pleasure of being on their show over the weekend as well. Shout out to those guys with a great draft show. Fun stuff. And over the weekend too, I got to see the greatest horror movie of all time, by the way. Just want to mention that. Alien. Sigourney Weaver. Greatest horror film of all time. Fight me. By the way, it's better than the sequel, in my opinion. Love the sequel. Original's better. All right. I will see y'all on Wednesday. Please be sure to stay safe out there. Please be sure to take care of your physical as well as your mental health. And please, please, please be sure to contact your local state representatives and senators to demand change for gun violence in America. Doesn't matter where you lean. Light, right, left, center. It's an issue that impacts every single one of us, no matter what people try to gaslight you on the right, on the left, anywhere. There's no one solution for this problem, but it's something we've all got to come together to fix because it impacts all of us. So let's do what we can and address this issue in its many different facets and forms. I will see you guys on Wednesday's show of more NBA playoff stuff. We will eulogize the 2024 Los Angeles Lakers. And by the way, I'm a man who does not care to admit when he's wrong, but maybe celebrate that take 2 weeks ago when I said the Lakers were DOA if they beat the New Orleans Pelicans and face the Denver Nuggets. I'm just saying. See you then, y'all. God bless y'all. Peace out. It's coming, Lakers fans, and y'all know it. Thanks so much for watching the show on YouTube, and be sure to go click that big red subscribe button and check out the other clips and full shows from Carving It Up Live, as well as our other incredible content creators here on the Grid Network.